We're investors in public equities, and we're trying to understand more about the Kazakhstani environment, especially the banking sector. Could you introduce yourself a bit? What areas do you have the most experience in, and what level of contact have you had with the C-levels of banks in the country?
For the last 15 years, I've worked in the banking industry, particularly in the payments segment. This includes payment cards, internet acquiring, POS devices, and internet banking. From 2010 to 2017, I was an employee of a major bank, Kazkommertsbank, which was a leader in retail banking. It was acquired by Halyk in 2018. The bank was merged into Halyk, and I continued my work there, focusing on internet banking, software development, innovative products, internet acquiring, and eventually the ecosystem marketplace, or lifestyle banking solutions. This includes tickets and more. Most of my expertise is in payments, including wallets and payment cards like Visa and MasterCard.
Would you be able to talk a little about banking lending?
Yes, I can talk about that as well. For about 10 years, I was a middle manager. I started from lower positions and was promoted to head of the internet banking department. In 2020, I was offered a job as CEO of a bank subsidiary. We decided to separate certain types of businesses, especially the ecosystem, payments, and internet-related payments. Around that time, we also started our internet remote lending and partnered with consumer electronics retail networks for online loans. In 2021, we launched our own marketplace, Halyk Market. We were more of a platform, not merchants ourselves, and 90% of our volume was sold with loans, not advance payments.
To give you an overview of the topics we'll discuss, we want to start with market and competitive dynamics, touch on regulation, governance, and then capital allocation. I want to start with the market. We see that Halyk has a very high ROE in the 30s and a dominant market position. Can you help us understand why that's the case and whether you think it will continue in the future?
Halyk as a group has always had, and probably still has, certain relations with the government. I'm not sure if you know, but there was a power transition in 2022, and the former president is somewhat related to the shareholder. There has been a lot of support for the last 20 years. The bank has been growing, particularly through government contracts, salary programs, and corporate financing, most of which comes from corporate. It was never very strong in retail. With the acquisition of Kazkommertsbank, they improved a bit, but then there was a shift to merger procedures for at least 1 or 2 years. That's when Kaspi sensed it was time to invest in marketing and introduce new products, taking over the retail business. Kaspi is now the biggest retail business in Kazakhstan, while Halyk remains a leader in corporate, which is larger than the retail business overall. Halyk is involved in construction, oil and gas, and other corporate products, providing corporate loans for exploration and development of these large industries. That is still the case, with Halyk being at least twice as big as Kaspi, with the corporate business predominantly with Halyk and the retail business with Kaspi. Since 2022, there has been a shift, albeit slowly, with Kaspi and other banks trying to capture some of Halyk's corporate business. It's happening slowly, but Halyk is successfully protecting and retaining their business.
Do they still maintain these government connections that make them the bank of choice for most government and quasi-government corporations? When we talk to them, they mention being the preferred bank for these entities. Do you expect them to maintain these relationships? Or do you foresee them eroding over time, losing business to other banks?
Yes, they still do because the business elites in the country are really interconnected. And there's a precedent for this. We see that in certain business segments or with certain large customers, companies are trying to share and buy products from other banks as well. They remain a significant partner with Halyk. Previously, they were reluctant to go elsewhere because Halyk is big and has a reputation of being too big to fail. However, in the last 2 or 3 years, we've noticed some shifts. Large customers are taking steps when negotiating business positions, loans or corporate loans, and even salary projects, to consider other banks. They are not terminating their business with Halyk, as it remains a major financial player with a wide variety of products. Essentially, they are exploring other options, which is now possible. Smaller SMEs and medium-sized businesses would buy anything suitable for their business. In contrast, larger segments like oil, gas, and construction were previously hesitant to go elsewhere due to the size of their projects. Now they are considering other options, though not on a mass scale. Occasionally, we hear about new projects with other banks, but it's not a significant trend yet. However, we are hearing about it.
So, before 2022, you never heard anything like that. Now, once in a while, you see something.
Yes, exactly.
Which banks are the ones you're hearing about? Is it Jusan or Forte?
For Forte, they have their own kind of small businesses that they service. Plus, the shareholder has different business interests, owning parts of telecommunications companies, factories, news channels, and more. Most businesses are interconnected with the banks. The latest news is that Jusan struck a goodwill deal with the new leadership. They have bigger projects, like setting up a free economic zone near Almaty, the business center of the country. It's a huge project, and they have reached a mutual consensus on what needs to be done in the financial sector for the next 10 years. We're talking about new products and everything, but at the moment, no one can endanger Halleck's position. There are so many interests that could start crumbling, which could drag the economy down if you proceed in that manner. If you want to do it eventually, it's more like a Game of Thrones scenario. You have to proceed step by step, and it will take time. If someone is aiming for that exact business, it will take time. You can't just take it away. If it fails, it could drag many different businesses, segments, and industries along with it. It won't work that way. What they're suggesting is to build something new. If the government and the new leadership are willing to support us as close partners, then let's do it. They're aiming for a free economic zone for new projects, like crypto and similar ventures. We'll see how that unfolds.
How long do you think it will take for them to become as big as Halleck? What time frame are we discussing? Are we talking about 10 years, 20 years, or 5 years?
Well, anything can happen, right? What we definitely know is that up until 2030, the current leadership is going to stay, and probably nothing will change in 5 years. We're talking about former CIS and Soviet countries, where most of the presidents and leadership are closely tied to the economy. It's like the country is their business. The shift in leadership has been somewhat mild, softer than in some other countries around us. But it has happened. They have a mandate until at least 2030, and beyond that, no one can say for sure. I don't believe much will change in 5 years. Anything can happen, of course. And by that, I mean in a negative way. The same applies to Russia, for example. Anything can happen negatively, leading to changes in power struggles and the redistribution of resources and assets. But if we're talking about stable businesses, the development of events doesn't indicate changes in 5 years. Maybe in 10 years, they could lose their position. A significant experience I had was with Kazkommertsbank, the bank I used to work for, which was acquired. The shift happened over 7 years. Kazkommertsbank was quite powerful in retail business, ranking number 2 after Halleck in terms of assets. Around 2010, Halleck was number 1 in assets. Kazkommertsbank was number 2. Forte didn't exist yet as a bank, and Kaspi was somewhere around number 6 or 7. The shareholders struggled for about 8 years to retain power and the businesses associated with Kazkommertsbank. It was a balanced bank in terms of corporate and retail, unlike Halleck, which leaned more towards corporate, and Kaspi, which leaned towards retail. Eventually, Kazkommertsbank was acquired, with some saying it was political and others saying it was economic. The power struggle lasted around 7 years, with conflicts of interest with the shareholders starting in 2012. By 2018, the bank was acquired, with the news breaking in 2017. I guess this could apply to Halleck's position, similar to Kazkommertsbank, and history could repeat itself. The process may have started in 2023, leaving only 5 years. This is something I mentioned before. There are slow processes, like someone leaving or buying new assets, but still staying with Halleck. These could be early signs of losing power, but I wouldn't say anything will change in the next 7 years.
It's interesting that you mention this. We saw some news about the shareholders. I believe one of the shareholders was connected to the previous ruling government. Earlier this year, there was news about them possibly paying $1 billion to settle discussions on the asset recovery program. Can you talk a bit more about how you expect that to evolve? We also see Almex selling their shares. Could this be related? Can you help us understand what's going on there and any potential regulatory risks? Or is it just between the shareholders and the bank isn't really connected to them?
The billion you mentioned is perceived by many as a kind of tax. It was widely covered in the news. The perception is that they made money with support and possibly broke some rules. To continue operating, they had to make a deal. The former government is widely respected, and the president is seen as the leader of the nation. Seizing assets from them would cause a huge conflict and could damage the economy. It seems they struck a deal, but the details are unknown. The money was paid and questions have stopped, at least for now. No one knows for how long this will last. Maybe until the next term or until the former president passes away. Regarding the secondary public offering, SPO, of $300 million, I can't say much because I haven't been around for at least a year. I don't know the current agenda, but it might be time to start getting liquidity back. I can't comment further because I'm not aware of the current situation. I saw something about it a few weeks ago, but I don't know what's happening now. The first part is definitely about the new deal they struck. As for what's happening now, I really have no idea.
How would you characterize the relationship between the Halleck management, the government, and the shareholders, specifically Almex? Are they involved in the day-to-day operations, or does the bank operate independently? Also, what level of contact does the government have with the bank? Does it use the bank to implement policy, or is it not necessarily involved? I'm trying to understand how these dynamics work.
Almex is not involved in the day-to-day operations. The current bank leadership, along with the board, has full independence in decision-making. The strategy is primarily driven by Ms. Shayakhmetova. I've had the honor to work directly with her. She makes her own decisions, whether they are big corporate decisions or smaller ones. She is not a micromanager, but likes to be involved. I haven't seen Almex interfere in daily operations. There is a board of directors, and previously, Mr. Pavlov, who is a representative of the shareholder, not Almex, but the actual shareholder, played a role. He is a former minister of finance in Kazakhstan with significant experience. He acted as a kind of a witness or overseer, ensuring that spending aligned with shareholder interests. There is a role for that, as well as security compliance in the bank, which reports directly to the CEO, but also has connections to Almex, or the shareholder's governing company. However, most decisions are made by the board of directors and the CEO, especially Ms. Shayakhmetova, who is very decisive. We're talking about big loans, corporate decisions, and product lines. She is very active in these areas.
Would you say that most decisions are made on a technical basis or a political basis? For example, when approving a loan for a mining project, is it based on the project's viability, or is it influenced by connections with certain individuals?
Lately, and perhaps for the last 10 years, it's been more of a technical focus. Essentially, it's all business. She publicly mentioned that although there were instances where the government approached the bank, asking for funding for certain projects, she declined if she deemed them unprofitable or risky. Even if these requests came from the government, elites, or business elites of the country, she would refuse. Of course, not all of these deals are public, but her reputation is built on this technical approach. If the spreadsheet shows a positive outcome, they would work with the business. If it's purely political, they would decline. However, you can still see failed projects like the light rail transport system in the capital. Those are real crimes where people took money and ran away. These instances are not repetitive, though.
How do you think this changes after the power transition? Do you think there will be more or fewer of these one-time projects? I mean, projects that are more politically decided rather than being viable on their own.
That's more of an economic issue. We have fewer projects overall, less construction, less exploration. Only oil and gas are still growing. The development of natural resources is increasing, but there are fewer construction and infrastructure projects. On a national scale, we have fewer projects to finance or start. It's not just bank-related, it's an overall country issue.
What about the impact of the Russia-Ukraine war? We've heard that many Russian businesses are using former CIS countries to conduct global business. How much do you think this affects Halleck's business with Russian government entities or individuals, especially from a sanction risk standpoint? I'm trying to understand if they're selling products to Russia that they shouldn't be, and if they're financing these products, which could lead to sanctions.
It's pretty straightforward. I was part of the process, especially with payment cards, payments, and money transfers. I understand how compliance and currency exchange officers work. Halleck ensures compliance with sanctions. There are narrow streams of money coming in and out, which is more technical than deliberate. Even Visa and MasterCard lack the resources to completely shut it off. As neighboring countries, people move in and out, making it hard to stop entirely. Sanctioned banks and companies stopped working almost immediately. The money flow reduced, and the bank follows regulations, having talks with the U.S. State Department. I live near the U.S. consulate and embassy, which are close to the bank office. In 2022, 2023, and parts of 2024, there were many meetings with the State Department to ensure compliance with regulations and sanctions. In Kazakhstan, VTB24, a subsidiary of the Russian-sanctioned VTB24, operates under sanctions. They continue to work through branches, dealing in rubles. They developed a unique business model due to the sanctions. People use them to send and receive money to and from Russia. Crypto payments are another narrow stream, though Russia's central bank pushes crypto into a gray or black area, fearing money is leaving Russia when they need it most. Chinese cars are sold to Russia, mostly directly from China, but some through Kazakhstan and other neighboring countries like Georgia or Kyrgyzstan, which have more financial ties to Russia. Kazakhstan shares the longest border in the world with Russia, which impacts the situation, but the overall impact isn't huge.
One thing they're trying to understand is how Halyk has been paying a lot of dividends. They're paying 50% of their net income as dividends. Do you expect that to continue? Do you expect a change in the dividend policy? What drives that policy? Understanding this is crucial for investors, as it's a significant aspect of Halyk. Paying a 50% dividend, it's pretty large.
I guess that was part of the deal. The one we talked about is to be able to pay all of the dividends. In 2009, during the subprime crisis, the government and the Treasury helped out by providing packages to keep the banks operational. Halyk was part of that, but they repaid all of the outstanding debt, plus the money we've discussed, so they could start paying dividends. The profits, as you can see in the annual reports, are growing. Dividends are being paid to all shareholders, international investors, and even employees. The current policy is to maximize dividend payouts universally to all shareholders. This approach will likely continue, and it could even improve depending on the actual numbers and business performance. Profitability is currently outpacing inflation, so it should remain stable. One reason for this is risk aversion. The bank is not reinvesting back. The business is growing, profits are being made, and dividends are being paid out. The strategy is to secure funds in case of a crisis. As long as the business remains profitable, this approach will continue. I don't foresee any changes in the near future. As I mentioned, dividends are even being paid to employees at all levels over the last 3 years, starting from 2022. They struck a deal allowing them to pay out dividends, and since then, everyone, including international investors, shareholders, Almex, and employees, is receiving dividends. This happens maybe once or twice a year. Whenever there is news about dividend payouts, employees are very happy because they know they will receive their bonuses 2 or 3 weeks afterward.
One thing we're trying to understand is, what do you think are the key risks for Halyk over the next 3 years? What would concern you if you were a Halyk shareholder?
The current size of the business is not as large as it could be because they're still losing retail business. Payments to Kaspi are significant, with salary programs interconnected with payment cards, transactions, and loans. Ultimately, it's about consumer loans, where Kaspi is very strong technologically and is perceived as the best retail bank by its customers. Many Halyk employees have Kaspi cards and products. There's a joke that when something happens to Kaspi, even Halyk employees get frustrated. For corporate business, they might keep losing small chunks, which is natural. They will lose businesses that were politically influenced to choose Halyk initially. The bank is not bad in terms of product range, but some competitors are better, especially for SMEs, small and medium businesses. Big corporate banks will still do business with Halyk because they have money, and if a project is profitable, they will provide funds. If that changes, it may happen in 5 years, but right now, the numbers and perception are strong. Profits have been growing for the last 3 or 4 years, and they are paying dividends. Everything looks very fine in those terms.
Do you think any of these factors will change over the next 3 years? Will profits continue to grow, ROE remain above 30, and dividends stay above current levels?
The only concern is that they might hit a plateau. Profits could stop growing as they are now. The share price might remain the same or even lower. I can't recommend specific actions due to company policy, but if you look at the numbers conservatively, everything seems fine. The bank is very conservative in its financial loan and product range strategies. They are not first adopters and wait for others to launch new products before coming in with scale. They focus on retention since they are already number one. They don't have to be aggressive. My concern is hitting a plateau, which could mean shrinking with inflation. We'll have to see about that.
What share of the business do you think is related to government connections that could be lost over the next 10 years?
It could be as much as 40%, but again, it depends on the current situation. The new leadership doesn't have as much influence as the previous leadership did, so they can't just tell someone to work with Jusan, for example. It wouldn't work. So, more or less, I guess at least 35 to 40% could have been political with government projects, basically. Government projects, government salary products, insurance, that kind of stuff, including pensions.
Is that 40% of the corporate or 40% of the whole bank?
Corporate. The whole bank structure is something like 70% corporate business and 30% retail business. Out of those 70%, I'd say at least 40% of the business is somehow related to the government, and that's the strength of the bank. Basically, all of the big projects are somehow involved with Halleck, with them being a partner somehow.
They're the largest. It's hard not to do business with them.
Yes, exactly. That's the point. You can't really say that those 40% would stand up and leave or be influenced. Those 40% could stay because the product is fine.
Does Halleck have a good reputation as being one of the best-run banks in Kazakhstan?
It has the reputation of being the most stable bank, and there's no doubt about that. The reputation is that it's somehow related to business elites. It's the biggest one, and no one will ever let them fail, at least in the near future. Not even their enemies would want them to fail. They might want a part of it, but they can't destroy it. In the perception of the overall population, it is the most stable bank. There are reasons for that, especially in the business community. They know it's a very conservative bank. They think twice before making a decision. They never jump into projects, whether small or big, without careful consideration. The credit policy is very conservative. That's one of the reasons why Kaspi, for example, won the retail from Halleck and Kazkommertsbank after they merged. Kazkommertsbank had the biggest retail business, and Halleck had the most corporate business. The product ranges, loans, credit, and consumer loans were technologically advanced with good usability. However, the approval rates declined because Halleck is a conservative bank. All the retail customers who got declined went to Kaspi. I'm not sure the same applies to corporate. I'm pretty sure it doesn't. But I mean, different scales, absolutely. In terms of retail business, that's 100% what happened. Everyone switched from the best Kazkommerts products to also good Kaspi products. Eventually, in 7 years, the Kaspi products got much better because Halleck doesn't like taking risks, especially in retail. They lost the payments business and the consumer retail loan business, losing their leading position. The conjoined Kazkommerts, and Halleck was the leader in everything for 2018 and part of 2012. But step by step, the retail business shifted. However, the corporate business is still there and going strong.
Can you talk a bit more about why they are expanding to Uzbekistan? Are they trying to hedge risks or grow because they can't grow anymore in Kazakhstan? What are the reasons for these movements?
Uzbekistan is a very promising market. After their change in political regime, the new leadership is promoting business very well. In terms of population growth and development, it's similar to Kazakhstan 5 or 7 years ago. They are a bit behind in terms of products and expertise, maybe by 5 to 7 years. That's why everyone knows that if we do the same things we are doing in Kazakhstan, and they let us do the same work with the same products in Uzbekistan, it will work. The purchasing power is there, and the regulation is very liberal. Regionally, it's a market with new rising opportunities. Russia has entered with their marketplaces and banks, especially since the start of the war. Kazakhstan also entered with many businesses. It's a small country with almost twice the population, and profits expected to be on par with Kazakhstan's GDP in about 5 years. Everyone likes that perspective. The shareholder saw the opportunity, and they already have businesses there. So that's why he directed them to go to Uzbekistan.
What do you think the current government leadership wants to do with Halleck? Does he want to keep Halleck as it is, reduce it over time, or does he not care too much? What can he do about it?
You can't really not care too much. I guess they want to lower the influence. That's something any new leadership would want, divide and conquer. As long as Halleck is not a political competitor, everything is fine. If the current leadership perceives it as all about business and there's no danger of wanting to come back, everything should be fine. They might want them to be a bit smaller, especially with Jusand being on the right. I wouldn't say it's a huge rivalry. Politics is tricky, and we don't have any bright politicians likely to be the next president, so it's hard to predict. As long as there's no rivalry in terms of political influence, and the bank isn't used as a tool for promoting things, everything should be fine.
Do you think that's the case right now?
I guess not, but that can change. The transition happened quite recently, only 2 years ago. Maybe something could happen in a year or two if the old group feels they have the resources, power, and support to try again. We hope we're past the point where the power shift could be violent. Anything can happen, as we see in Russia. But hopefully, if it's a peaceful transition, they will work it out. The bank and the whole group have a long history and are interconnected with many businesses and interests. I wouldn't say everyone would want to shake or destroy that. The negative part could be that it shrinks to a certain degree, maybe half of what it is now, and the other half dilutes to other political elites who have their own banks. That's the worst that could happen in maybe 5 to 7 years. But I wouldn't say the bank would close down.
And the mechanism for that to happen is the government slowly moving their business away, rather than a mandatory central bank regulation obligating the change. It's more of a slow process than a top-down process.
Exactly. The current shareholder has a lot of liquidity and substantial financial resources. For instance, if the government wants to build something like a bridge or a new factory, they would want to maintain a positive relationship with this person because he has the resources to make it happen. You can't just shift these financial streams easily. A significant portion of it is the shareholder's own money. So it's important to stay on good terms with him.